Hi, I'm Mark Shanahan. I directed the radio play you just listened to and also serve as the curator for the Westport Country Playhouse Radio Theater Series in partnership with WSHU Radio. The Radio Theater Series was born out of the experience of the pandemic of 2020 as the Playhouse considered ways in which we could continue to create theater and tell stories and serve our audience while unable to invite people to the theater itself. We've had a lot of fun since then, creating radio theater under some particularly challenging circumstances. First with our Westport Country Playhouse Christmas Carol, and more recently with Kaven Penmichow's wonderful ghost tale, The Return. And now we're thrilled to bring you Special Delivery by the remarkable Shea Youngblood. Shea Youngblood is as much an adventurer as she is a writer. She seems to have done a little bit of everything in life. Shea is a Georgian-born playwright and has worked as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Eastern Caribbean, an au pair, an artist model, and poet's helper in Paris. Shea is the author of a collection of short stories called The Big Mama Stories and a celebrated novel, Soul Kiss. Her fiction, articles, and essays have been published in Oprah Magazine, Good Housekeeping, Black Book, and Essence Magazines, among many other publications. And her plays Shaking the Mess Out of Misery, Talking Bones and Amazing Grace, Black Power Barbie, Communism Killed My Dog, and Square Blues, a blues musical, have been widely produced. Among her many accomplishments, she has received the Lorraine Hansberry Playwriting Award, a 2004 New York Foundation for the Arts Sustained Achievement Award. She is an Edward Albee honoree and received several NAACP Theater Awards. In addition to being a playwright, Shea travels the country teaching playwriting and creative writing at institutions including University of Mississippi, Texas A&M, and NYU. I asked Shea to join us today to talk to her about her inspiration for Special Delivery, her journey as a writer, and just what it takes to write good old-fashioned radio drama. Shea, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Hey, Mark.
Shea, I've heard you say that all of your writing is somewhat autobiographical. And so I ask you, is Special Delivery based upon any ideas which spring from your own childhood?
I grew up with older parents. My birth mother died when I was about 3.5 years old. And I was raised by great grandmothers, great aunts, great uncles, young grandfathers, but they were mostly in their 50s and 60s when I was born. And so I also spent the summer with my great-grandmother, who lived in two worlds, basically. She lived in the world of spirits, and I would arrive at her house. Let's imagine me, 8 years old, I arrive at her house, and she starts screaming and crying, and, my God, I haven't seen you in so long. And she wraps me up in her arms, and she calls me a different name. Not my name. she calls me a different name. And I say, Grandma, that's not my name. And she says, you know who I'm talking to. Just come when I call you. And then we get into just chatting and talking. And she said, I wish you wouldn't come visit me at night because, you just wake me up pulling on my big toe. And I was like, Grandma, I just got here. And so sometimes she would go into these reveries. But I think she was talking to my mother. And I would just be, kind of confused. But then it became just a part of our time together that she was in this other world. And then at night, I began, I was kind of terrified being, at night. And I would get up and go get into her bed. And she would say, go get back in the bed. She said, what are you scared of? And I was like, well, I don't know. Somebody might be in there. And she's like, well, if anybody's in there, tell them, to just be quiet because you got things to do. You got to go to bed. Go back in there. And so I began talking into the, when I got scared, talked myself out of it, basically. And it was seen as her being in those worlds and talking to the ancestors, talking to spirits, talking to my dead mother. People saw her as not really mentally stable. And I didn't want to, join in that. So I just kind of, shut that part off of myself in terms of being close to the spirit world, if you will. So that's been a part of my growing up is, being around people who could, who had second sight, who could see things that everybody else couldn't, who believed in the power of dreams to tell you things. Because every morning at around breakfast, I'd get asked, so what did you dream last night?
So there's quite a bit of Asher in you, or you and Asher, this creation of this young boy and his experiences, right? And when you talk about second sight, do you ever feel that that ability to sort of see through the veil is part of your talent and your journey as a writer? Does that have anything to do with your the way in which you conjure voices out of the air as a writer?
Sometimes I feel as if I channel stories because they're not all my own stories. They're a part of me, but I expand on ideas that I, from my dreams. I sit down to write. Let's say I'm writing a story about these three women who run a bookstore. I love books. I love libraries. I'm writing this thing, and I think I'm writing about something supernatural, if you will. And I did a reading of my play, Talking Bones, which is about these three generations of women running a bookstore. And my Aunt Lillian, who was blind most of her life, she was in the audience. And at the end, she blurted out, "That's me and you and your big mama." And I was thinking I was writing about something so strange and separated from myself. Right. I wasn't really aware at the time because it was two separate worlds, you know, their world and mine. But I do sit down, when I sit down to write sometimes and I have a story and some characters and I'm in this other world and it's not me and it's not you. It's like all the things that have brought themselves to my table in a way. All my experiences walking through museums, going to the library, reading books, watching TV, talking to strangers on a bus. All those things and those people and those experiences come to bear in those stories. And what's happening now? What's in the news? And so I'll wake up 4 hours later and go, oh my God, what did I write? Who did that? Who wrote that story? Who did that? So in a way, Special Delivery feels like it was channeled. You asked me about, 6 weeks ago, if I would be interested in writing a 30-minute radio play, and you gave me the barest, simplest brief, a suspense story, maybe a ghost story, and you made a couple of other suggestions, and I thought, oh, I don't know if I can do this, but you know, I love being challenged by form, by genre. I've written short stories. I make paintings. Essays. I've written screenplays and, you know, novels and poetry. And so I thought, well, why not? Let me give it a try. What's the worst that could happen? He could say it's terrible. And, you know, we go away friends, right? We shake hands. And it's something in it sparked me. I was... I realized after I wrote this, I was grieving the sudden loss of a young friend. And so the writing of this play really helped me to be in touch with the spirit of this young person and where he went and what might he be thinking and hoping that he was somewhere having a good time and laughing. And yeah.
That's really beautiful. Although you never told me that while you were writing it. I had a feeling when you would send me each draft that there was something very personal and current going on in the way you were conjuring the voices, but also what you were leaning into in the heart of the piece. Because as fun and goofy as a ghost story can sometimes be, and all the ways in which you kind of embrace that and the genre of it, I also felt clearly there is something rather personal, and there's just so much depth and feeling and heart in your work, which there always is. You bring up the thought that you were up for the challenge. And I wanted to ask you about writing for radio, and particularly even maybe writing a ghost story. You're right. I just gave you the idea when I invited. Like, what do you think? What would you like to write? I was interested in what you might want to write about, and I couldn't wait to see what you returned with. You've worked in so many different media. Each medium has its own necessities. What was the challenge of writing for radio, of writing for an acoustic medium where the audience has to see things in their mind's eye, but not necessarily, be able to write the action as you would for a stage play?
When I had the outline of the story, one of the first things I did was make a list of all the sounds that were possible, from the meeting in the airport of this art courier with this young boy, and then they're in the car, and of course there's a thunderstorm, and that's, a lot of sounds there, and then going into this house. Now, house and home, that's one of my major themes in all of my work, because I lived in so many homes when I was growing up. I went from house to house because everybody wanted the little orphan baby, basically. And so that's a big theme in my work. And I draw houses, I paint houses, and so I wanted this, when I created this, I knew that they would be going into this kind of creepy house. It's going to be a creepy, kind of creepy house ghost story. I immediately thought of creating giving the house a personality, character through the sounds, you know, that it, when you walk up the stairs, the stairs are speaking. They don't just squeak, you know, they're kind of speaking in a way. The walls talk. And I had this whole, and so that's when I, again, channeled former experiences. I've had a lot of different jobs. I've been in, I've worked as an archivist and tour guide for a house museum in Atlanta, the house of the first African-American millionaire in the state of Georgia, Alonzo Herndon. And I actually documented every object in the house. And being in that house, it was filled with a lot of history and ghosts and memories. And there's a mural on the wall of the history of the family. And so I immediately thought about a house that had a house that could speak, not just the sounds of the house too, but that there would be images in the house that could speak as well. And so the portraits begin to have character. And so how can they speak? This is a medium of radio. They're not going to be able to see these images. And so thus the museum was born, the House of Rest and Reparations.
You know, I love that also because you're so adept and beautiful at, I felt like I could see those pictures on my mind's eye the first time I read them because of the way they're described. And then also hearing the actors talk about them, their point of view about it. It was one of those lessons in radio drama where we could really see something in our mind's eye because of how detailed and you and the actors together had created these images in my mind. It's so wonderful. It's funny, our sound designer, I should mention, you and I were talking to him, John Gramata. He's been putting together all the music and the sound effects in his own house, which is from the 1800s. And he even said, you know, my house speaks. And so the stairs and the creaks and all that, he's recording from his own home. And he could hear your love of homes and houses and history and lean into his own stuff, too, as part of the collaboration, which is such a fun thing. When you sent me the drafts, in particular, I never mentioned this. I knew as soon as I saw it that I would ask you someday and I would wait till our production was completed. But at the top of every document, whenever you sent me a draft, was a quote by Charles Dickens. And the quote said, "An idea, like a ghost, must be spoken to a little before it will explain itself." And I love that quote. And I was sort of taken with the fact that you put it there as a little reminder to yourself on what you were writing. But I wondered what it meant to you and why it was there.
It was a reminder for me, the spark to remember to pull that thread throughout, the first spark of the idea, and to take that throughout the whole piece. But when I saw that, it's about all of my work, really. It's like when an idea gets hold of you, be quiet. Let it speak to you, because in silence, that's a sound as well. And in that silence, sometimes you can hear, because I have a tendency sometimes because there are too many sounds, too much noise, too many ideas at once. And so sometimes, and then I'll just turn everything off and I'll sit in the silence with an idea and let it come to me. And one of the things that came to me most directly was my Aunt Lillian, who, as I said, she grew up, I grew up with her. She was blind most of her life. And when she came to live in Atlanta near me, I had to change my vocabulary in a way. I wanted her to see the world that I lived in. And so I began to describe things to her. And this play was just, you know, she came to me in such a vivid way of all those sounds, because sometimes I will close my eyes and walk around a room. You know, I come to her house to visit her in her apartment, her tiny little apartment, and the furniture would be moved around. And I was like, I'm thinking, she can't see it. And she would ask me for curtains on the window. And I was like, why do you need curtains? And why? Just like, well, you know, she explained to me that, you know, that she could feel the changes. So she conveyed to me that she could feel the changes. And so there was something about wanting to share my work with her, to my creative world with her in a way that she would, that she could appreciate. And she, and certainly, and also that she could see how she inspired it. So she definitely was a big inspiration for this piece, and knowing that she would be sitting in her rocking chair on the sixth floor of this building where she used to live, and that she could, you know, her eyes would, you know, she would close her eyes, and that she could be there with me and have that experience.
Let's talk about our cast a little bit. It's funny, I wanted to ask you, Rhonda Ross, we both knew from many years ago and is a conduit in our friendship and our relationship. And Rhonda plays Lisa, and that's her real life son, Raif, playing Asher. Our listeners might be interested to know that all of our actors recorded separately, and then our sound designer, John Gramada, stitched all their lines together to make it sound like they were in the same room. It's sort of an epic thing that John does, and it's really beautiful to hear it when it all comes together. But Raif is an 11-year-old. I've known Raif since he was just a little kid. And when he was 9, I watched him put together movies with his iPhone. He was already a filmmaker. And when we first started recording, I said to Raif, do you have any questions about this character? He said, no, I understand this guy. I understand him. I'm a filmmaker, and I love horror movies. And yet you didn't necessarily know that about Raif, but it was a perfect match, right? What's it like to hear Raif, Rhonda, James Lane, and Leon Addison Brown bring your words to life and connect with your characters whom you created? Sometimes I'm sure it doesn't sound like what you imagine in your head. Sometimes they hear things you didn't even know about. What's it like to hear those actors bring these words to life?
What I love about theater is the collaborative aspects of theater. And everyone brings their skills to the table, and they also bring themselves to the table. I love that moment of meeting Raif and him saying that he's like, yeah, I know that. I know that character. You know, I've been there. You know, I've been that angry little boy, like, you know, the adults aren't listening and you're like, you know, mad at them. That floored me, actually. And it was just so affirming to hear that I was, again, able to, I'm not an 11-year-old boy, but I was able to channel some of those experiences that I had had and that I had observed in others, and bring it into that character and channel in a way that was, again, it was channeling into this character. And Rhonda, who is an amazing performer, and I've seen her grow in just such beautiful ways over the years, her performances as a singer and as an actor. And so I was just delighted to again be reunited with her in this experience. She was in one of my first plays, you know, she was in Talking Bones, and as a young, you know, undergraduate, and I was just, she was amazing in those moments, and to see her now and to experience having her work on this project was just amazing. And the other two, oh my God, the entire cast, they just brought my words to life. It's like I felt like I wrote something down, I sent it to you, and I didn't know what was going to happen. I certainly heard it in my head a certain way, but I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And when they start to breathe life into the alphabet, just the alphabet, these are, you know, normal words we use every day, nothing super special. I wasn't thinking it's anything super special, but they gave life, clothed, and, you know, just brought just the most beautiful breath into these characters. And I saw them in a different way. I was watching and listening as if I was seeing it for the first time. It's like, wow, because they brought so much of themselves to it. And that makes a difference, I think, when you're doing a project like this, when you're working in theater. People can show up and do the lines, do the work, but when they bring themselves to it, it's something special.
I got such a kick out of, we were all on microphones and on Zoom calls and in different states sometimes trying to put this together. And I got such a kick out of saying to the actors, you know, the microphone is really recording your behavior. If you believe in your imaginary circumstances, they seem real. And then we would watch them on screen being afraid of the house and looking around and full on living the experience of finding themselves in a car during a storm, of what the thunder could do for them, of peering into the eyes in a painting. And they acted it out so beautifully in their home, sometimes with their eyes closed. And I thought, you know, they're leaning into this to create a world that we really believe in because they believe in it. And that's part of the beauty of radio drama and all drama, really, right?
Well, Mark, I want to say that it was a fantastic experience working with you and the team. And also, I feel like I got to experience seeing you do something really magical and brilliant in bringing out these performances. You would give a note to an actor to kind of like bring that feeling of lifting something into their voice, or looking up or looking away or looking down. I just marveled at watching you work. And I want to just publicly thank you for your brilliant contribution to making these words come alive and really making this happen. I thought I was being punked. I know I said this to you before. I was like, this is a joke, right? All these amazing, brilliant people coming together to make a play about, you know, that I just wrote a few weeks ago.
I'm happy to accept that compliment, and especially because I hold you in high esteem. But I will also say that the old saying of the battle is have a good script and then get really good actors and get out of the way.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to you for bringing together a dream team, the sound designer. It's a dream team.
And I love the fact that you mention everyone in all their different departments, but also that you grow with the people. You look to your left and your right when you're younger, and you sort of grow with them as artists, and then you meet new people, and then it keeps snowballing in some ways. And what a joy to end up so many years later having the courage to call you and say, would you like to do this? Because it has been very meaningful to me. Mm. And, you know, the Playhouse is a really remarkable and special place. We're glad to have you in the ranks writing this, and we hope that maybe you'll find your way to Westport, Connecticut also, and join us at the Playhouse on the stage and in the audience to create theater and be part of the community in the near future. It's such a special joy to work with you, and I'm so grateful to you for this time. Thank you, Shay.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
This is Mark Lamus, Artistic Director of the Westport Country Playhouse, thanking you for joining us.
Hey.